Welcome to Well Told Tales, the Pulp Fiction podcast. By popular demand, we've got another zombie story for you. This one by Theodore Carter, who also wrote Well Told Tales 28, Final Notice. The story is read by the lovely and talented Steve Anderson of sgacreative.com. Steve is also a lead in our Off-Delayed Awesome Man series. My apologies on the latest missed Awesome Man. These full cast productions take a lot of production work, and my day job has been crazy busy lately. I am working on it, and I'll roll out the remaining episodes as soon as I can. I promise.
I Used to Love Her by Theodore Carter. She saunters out through the bedroom doorway, naked, stiff-legged, her neck bent to the side, moving in a series of jerks. "Sarah, you all right?" I ask. We've been fighting recently. I want to sound concerned.
Okay, she says.
But her voice is gravelly, barely comprehensible, filled with phlegm. I leave her alone as she squeezes past me into the bathroom and closes the door. We left the bar at 3 a.m., bickering because some stranger had tried to kiss her and nibble on her neck.
"Maybe I should have let him," she said,
as we stumbled drunkenly into a taxi.
"Maybe you did," I said.
We spilled out of the cab in front of our townhouse and made it up the steps to our front door with the help of the sturdy handrail. Behind the bathroom door, I hear her making a hacking sound. It could be a cough, vomiting, I'm not sure. She gets pretty uptight about me being around when she's like this. She has antiquated ideas about looking fresh. So I leave her upstairs and go down to the kitchen to make breakfast. I hear the shower running. She comes into the kitchen wearing my old blue t-shirt and a pair of mesh shorts. An odd choice of clothing for her, but I like that she's wearing my shirt. Maybe we've made up. The neck hole of the shirt pulls to the right. The waistband on her shorts is askew, and her underwear sticks out on one side, but not at all in a sexy way. She looks haggard, death-warmed over. Her normally pale skin is almost blue, and dark purple bags show under her eyes. I should say something kind, reassuring. I pull a skillet from the cabinet.
"Do you want some eggs?"
She grunts in affirmation and scratches her wet brown hair. It falls in front of her face. I turn my back to her and work at the stove, pretending to labor over my eggs. She really looks like hell, and though I know it's petty, I'm pretty disgusted. I try to push such immature thoughts away. Sarah is my first long-term relationship, my first go at commitment, and I shouldn't fuck it up because she looks like crap when she's hungover. I'm past that. I think I'm even in love with her. I push the eggs around in the pan and get a whiff of something acrid. I take the pan off the heat and smell it. Maybe the eggs are bad. It isn't the eggs, though. And after a moment, I begrudgingly come to the conclusion that the smell is Sarah. I turn and look at her over my shoulder. She's sitting on one of the bar stools at the counter, swaying back and forth like Stevie Wonder. She looks at me and makes a slow, guttural grunt. I turn back to my eggs. Jesus, she's disgusting. If it wasn't for her wet hair, I'd find it hard to believe she actually got in the shower. I know. There are times when I come home looking like shit, or I go play hoops and don't shower right away, and Sarah never says a word. It's really ridiculous for me to be so shallow. I start thinking about all the things she does that annoy me. How she leaves the peanut butter knife out after making a sandwich. How she picks at her toenail polish when we watch TV. Stuff like that. "Here are your eggs," I say, and I slide the plate and a fork in front of her. She grabs hold of the fork with her fist and starts stabbing at her eggs. When I went to her parents' house for Thanksgiving, they had about 4 forks next to each table setting. I can't believe this is the same girl those people raised. I figure, you know, sometimes when you're hungover, your whole body feels weak, your arms feel heavy. She wouldn't give me grief for it, so I leave her alone. I stand at the counter across from her and eat my eggs, but can't help watching her. She only stops momentarily to look at the gurgling coffee maker with quiet skepticism. Then she's slurping down her eggs again, like she's eating a bowl of soup. Half of the eggs aren't even going into her mouth. She's like Cookie Monster, her food dribbling down her chest onto the floor.
So, how you feeling, I say.
She still hasn't really said anything to me since she woke up. And I wonder if she's still mad at me. She doesn't answer, only shifts her wary gaze back toward the brewing coffee. The coffee machine beeps, signaling it's done. Sarah pops out of her seat when she hears the noise. She only looks at me briefly before walking over with that same laborious gait to the coffee pot, swiping it off the burner with a backhanded bitch slap. Jesus Christ, Sarah! But I sure as hell don't want to fuck around with her if this is how she's going to act, so I don't say anything else. She stumbles out of the kitchen and out the front door, letting the screen door bang shut behind her. I let her go. Maybe this is best for her just to leave for a while. When she comes home, she'll look at me with those soft eyes, her head down, and give me an apologetic hug. Still, I have to get the mop out for the coffee and sweep up the glass shards. It's hard not to be angry about that. I hear her an hour later. She lets the screen door bang behind her again as she enters. Instead of the soft, forgiving look I was expecting, she growls at me and walks past me into the kitchen. Her skin is a deeper blue-purple tone now, and I can see the outlines of her veins like spider webs on her cheeks. This has to be something more serious than a hangover.
Sarah, you feeling okay, I say?
She only grunts. Her bare feet are muddy, and I'm thinking it's good I haven't put the mop away. But I'm worried now, while she goes into the kitchen, as to whether I've cleaned up all the glass. If she cuts her foot, she's likely to bite my head off. I look at the brown footprints she left on the carpet. The markings are tinged with red, too. I look out the front door and see a dead cat on our front steps, its neck bent at an unnatural angle, and there's a pool of blood underneath its carcass. A neighborhood dog or raccoon probably got to it, I think, though I can't be sure. I go into the kitchen. Sarah paces back and forth mindlessly, drooling, grunting.
We should take you to a doctor, I say.
But it is Sunday, and there's no way in hell Sarah's going to let me drag her to urgent care. She doesn't respond, only moves toward me with that painful-looking walk of hers. She holds her arms out stiff in front of her, her head bent to the side. A strand of spittle runs from the corner of her mouth. I think maybe she's approaching me for the apologetic hug I predicted. I smile at her and reach out my arms, trying not to show my hesitation, my wincing at her deathly blue skin, her rotten smell, her uncontrolled drooling. We embrace. I grab her around the back and squeeze. She feels sweaty, fleshy, rigid, like a piece of bony fish. As I hold her, I think, that's it. I need to break up with her. If not today, then soon. I felt this way before, but then settled down. She leans into my neck and tries to bite me. Sarah, stop, I say, but she does it again. I push her away, and she snaps at my finger with her teeth. She misses, and her jaw smacks closed with a loud cracking sound. She snorts through her nose, letting out horrid-smelling breath, so foul I wonder if she bit that dead cat, broke its neck with her teeth. Stop, I yell. Sarah can be pushy, really bossy. She's never acted this bad before, but she does have a temper. She stands in front of me, her face contorted into an ugly scowl. This is when I get fed up. I can be understanding to a point, but the truth is she's been in a foul mood a lot lately. I know relationships are about compromise, but she's a real drag. I look at her in silence as she approaches. She's still grunting softly. Maybe I'm not in love with her anymore, just wanting to be in love with her. She never lets me pick the movie at Blockbuster, never wants to eat out at my restaurants, never wants to hang out with my friends. She's always making snide remarks about my clothes, saying things like, let's go buy you some more nice pants, like the pants I have are rags. The bars she likes to go to charge $5.50 for a Corona. Whenever she borrows my car, she takes my Guns N' Roses out of the CD player and leaves Tori Amos in there. It's comforting to finally realize her selfishness, but I can't ponder it too long because she's stumbling toward me. I need some time to think, I say, but she doesn't seem to hear me. I scamper past her out the front door. The neighborhood is quiet, almost eerily so, but it helps me think. After a few blocks, I become even more certain about things.
Sarah's not right for me. Not anymore. Commitment is good. I can commit. But I shouldn't commit to Sarah. I deserve someone kinder. It feels good to come to this conclusion on my own. I think it helps me act with a clear head later, when she starts eating the raw meat out of the fridge and going after small animals in the yard. Sarah, I'm sorry, I say to her as she lumbers across our cement patio, knocking over a lawn chair in an attempt to swipe up a blue jay she's wounded. I've got to call someone. You're out of control. She's focused on the elusive fluttering jay. The operator says all ambulances have already been dispatched. A busy day, she says. As she's saying it, I realize I can hear multiple sirens in the distance. She promises to send the cops. I'm on the front steps when the squad car screeches to a halt in our narrow driveway. A big, mustachioed patrolman gets out of the car, holding a shotgun. Where is she? He asks. I notice the right sleeve of his uniform is torn, and there's a smattering of blood on his thigh. Out back, I say, pointing. He pushes past me into the house. I follow as his heavy boots shake the floor. He stops while exiting the sliding glass back door and stands with one boot in the kitchen, the other on the top step, like he's afraid of getting too close. Stand back, he says, and he points his shotgun at her. Wait, I yell, but he ignores me and lifts the shotgun, taking aim. Everything is happening so fast. I want to talk things through. Sarah takes a slow but aggressive step toward the cop, bares her teeth, and hisses. Sarah, please, I say. The gun gives a monstrous roar, and Sarah's head is nearly blown clean off. It's devastating to see. I scream out in horror as the blood spills over the patio. Still, at least I know it never would have worked between us anyhow.
And that's our story. Well-Told Tales is a paying fiction market, and that's thanks to the generous donations from our listeners. If you'd like to help us pay our writers, you can visit welltoldtales.com and make a small, or even not so small, donation through our PayPal link at the top of the page. If you'd like to help us out, but your 401k is in the toilet, you could also go to iTunes and write a review about our podcast, or just tell your friends about us. As always, we distribute our audio files on a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works license. That means feel free to share to your heart's content. Just please don't modify the files and don't try to make a buck off of them. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week.